This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Sister Patricia Schnapp is a Roman Catholic nun and a professor of English at Siena Heights University. And for nearly three decades, Sister Pat has been teaching English literature to male prisoners. A coworker calls her an inspirational bringer of metaphors and Shakespeare to inmates of local prisons. Sister Pat Schnapp, writer, poet, and teacher, such a pleasure to welcome you to Stateside.
Thank you.
You've been teaching English at Siena Heights for nearly three decades, and for almost the same period of time, you've been teaching the inmates at the Gus Harrison Correctional Facility. How did that come to be?
I began as a member of the Catholic Chaplaincy Committee formed in Adrian once the prison was built about 30 years ago. And one day after a communion service at the prison, one of the men was walking out with me to the door, and he said, "You know, the worst part about being locked up here is that there is nothing to do." And it's true, there are jobs for a number of inmates, maintenance, working in the kitchen, of course, and food services, but there aren't enough, nearly enough, for everybody. So if the men already have completed their high school career and diploma, they do not go into the GED program, which is in all of the prisons, of course. The only programming really is maybe an AA program and the religious programming. So I mulled this over. I love to teach. I always have. I think as long as my jaws work, I always will. And I thought, well, maybe I could teach a class just for enrichment and use short stories.
Yeah.
Use literature, and we could use that as a springboard for conversations. I contacted the coordinator of volunteers at the prison, and we set up a class in African American literature, which is a favorite area of mine, and decided to set it up for an 8-week session and have maybe 20 students in it. Well, it happened, and when I walked into the classroom and saw these eager young men, I was just really excited. Our first read was Black Boy by Richard Wright, and they read that between the first and the second class, and I went in the room the next night. I had marked off several passages in the book that I thought, you know, if the conversation lags, I can always say, well, let's turn to page so-and-so. But I began instead by saying, well, before we begin to look in the book, are there any quick and dirty responses you have to the book in general? And at that point, the animation and the discussion was so lively and vigorous, and one man would bounce off what another one said, and then another one would want to comment on that, and somebody else up in front and somebody to the side. This went on for one full hour.
A teacher's dream. You have engaged students.
Oh, my gosh. As I've said to a lot of people, I said, I could have dropped dead behind the desk and they wouldn't have missed me. They were engaged. They were passionate. They had read the book. They wanted to talk about it. And my teacherly heart just took off, and I was hooked. From that point on, I thought, I always want to do this in my life.
And here you have been doing that. How have the classes evolved as far as how you work with the students and what you're teaching? I'm wondering if you decide, or is it kind of, do they bring ideas to the table?
They do. And often at the end of a class, I'll say, well, what do we want to look at next semester? I typically teach a class each semester for 12 weeks, and we use short stories to focus in on a particular theme. For instance, in the fall, I'll teach What is Man, and it will be, I call them guy stories written by and about guy issues. And then in the spring, it'll be gal stories written by women. And that flies very, very well. What's really interesting, Cynthia, is that no matter how far the experience in a short story is probably from the men's experience, and many of them are from Detroit, many were in gangs, they have an uncanny ability to find something in the story that they can relate to in their own lives and that they can talk about. And they love to discuss the story. Mm. My format typically is I'll give them the story the week before they read it, and then I'll put a few questions on the board when I go in and give them 20 minutes to refocus on the story. And they can use their Xerox copies to sort of support their answers. And it starts the conversation. And so then we we have about an hour to discuss it.
And now, you say they have this real gift for finding things that relate to their lives in these short stories. How do they relate to you?
I'm just one of the guys. I try very hard to be respectful of all opinions, regardless of whether they seem far afield from the story, and to sort of be the facilitator. And they're very respectful, and they are very grateful. Typically, they will tend to say the first time you come in, "I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to come in here and spend time with us." And that's a universal. They are all surprised and humbled and pleased that we come in from the outside. We're not getting paid. We interact with them as just ordinary students, ordinary guys. And for a lot of them, this is such a break from the attitude that they get from other inmates who might mock them if they tried to start a serious discussion about something they had read. It's a safe place for them. And a trust level builds in the course of the weeks that I'm there. And many of them, by the end of the semester, will reveal what their crime was. You know, I was a drug dealer. I murdered someone when I was young and high. Something like that. But they know that they're not going to be judged, and they're very grateful for that. It's a win-win experience. I think I get more out of it than they do, as a matter of fact.
Out of that, you have found fodder for writing, and you have a published book, Out of the Shadows. And I'm wondering, would you share one of your poems with us, sister?
Sure. They're more sketches, I think, of some of the men that I've met. Chico. He'd murdered someone, maybe more than one. His head was bald, and in class he spoke gently and with wisdom. Other inmates looked up to him, waited for his contribution to discussions. A lifer, he accepted prison as his home, knew he'd never leave. Didn't want any chaos or trouble to jeopardize the class taught by professors from a nearby university. Winced when the young smart aleck in the back of the room bragged about fooling the parole board and making parole, and then added, "I'll be back, because I'm going to go out there and do what I've been doing. Don't know nothing else, and I'll make good money. Have lots of women." Chico looked down at his hands, one missing an index finger. His tight jaws finally opened. "I made one mistake when I was young and high," he said, "but I've changed. I've grown up and changed, and I'll never get out." The room was silent, and the fluorescent light beamed onto his bent, hairless head, a pale, round moon.
That is Sister Pat Schnapp, a Sister of Mercy, who's an English professor at Siena Heights University in Adrian. And for more than 25 years, Sister has taught English classes to inmates at Gus Harrison Correctional Facility. That is so stunning, and it really does give us a sense of the man, not the inmate number.
Right.
And you've brought other parts, other members of the Siena Heights community into your work, including the students from criminal justice?
Exactly. We have a booming criminal justice program at Siena Heights, and I actually taught English to the woman who heads it up and now has her doctorate in sociology with a focus in criminal justice. So I said, you know, here we are, a big criminal justice program going on at Siena. 2 miles away, there's a huge prison with 2,300 men. It seems like we could get some good interfacing going on between the two of them. Anyway, we got the idea of teaching a class for credit inside the prison with 10 inmates and 10 criminal justice majors. We've done that now about 5 times. And the students from Siena will say it's the best class they've ever had. You can see their stereotype disintegrate. And we refer to them as the residents and the commuters. And we make them sit that way, resident commuter, resident commuter, resident commuter. And then the very first night, we'll have introductions. Everyone introduces him or herself. And then we say, all right, what is the purpose of prisons? Talk to the person next to you for 5 minutes, you and you. And so we get them in a conversation immediately. Our students are always just a little nervous going in.
Certainly, but all those stereotypes are strong ones.
Absolutely. As are, we discover, the inmates, because they're anticipating a bunch of snobby, preppy, wealthy, young college students who are going to look down their noses at them. And so they will reveal in our very last class, which is wonderful, in which we make each student get up and sit on the desk in the front of the room and talk for 5 minutes about what he or she has learned in the course of the class. And a number of the inmates will say, you know, we didn't know what to expect when we came in here. We were afraid we were getting judged. But our students are very nice. In 2 or 3 weeks' time, they'll go in, sit next to a favorite felon, and they're discussing the Tigers game or laughing and having a good conversation before class gets started. So our students get dismantled the negativity and realize that these men are smart. Some of them are very funny. And they come to realize that we can't define a person by the worst thing he ever did.
Hmm.
That people are more than that, that they're richer and fuller. And as Chico said, I did one terrible thing when I was young and high, but I've grown up and I've matured and now I'll never get out.
I do get the sense you have a compassionate view, but you're not romanticizing these inmates.
Well,
or are you? Do you feel?
I probably do a little bit. I'm sure I'm a romantic at heart. Nevertheless, I have to say that my heart does go out to the men who are lifers in particular, who come to class, who work very, very hard at doing well in the class. For instance, I like to introduce literary terms to them. So deus ex machina in medias res. And I'll put the terms on the board and explain them and say, so you can use these terms in talking about literature. And the next week, I can count on it. One man will raise his hand and say, would you say that this story has an in medias res beginning? And they want to use the terms they've learned. And yet they're going to be in prison till they die. But they have an eagerness to learn, and I think an intellectual hunger.
Have you seen writers grow out of your classes where can read their works and go, boy, oh boy, you've got something here?
Absolutely. I just finished a 2-week poetry workshop at the prison with the men, and there is so much buried talent in prisons. This is another heartbreaking fact. So much that these men have a potential to do and do well. But their talents don't have an outlet because there's no place for them to use them. We've had creative writing workshops there. They've written short stories. And even in their written responses to the questions that I put on the board, you can see articulateness, intelligence, insight, analytical skills, real ability. Not every man brings the same background with him to the class. And so there are a couple of men who can barely write. They're barely literate. And this is a little bit of a problem. So I've had a couple, for instance, over the years come up and say, you know, I don't read so well. But he said, I'd really like to come to this class for the conversation. And so is it okay if I still come? I'll say, sure, but what I'd like you to do is find someone in the class that you can touch down with and find out what the story was about before you come to class, so you'll understand the conversation and maybe be able to participate. So when I give them 20 minutes to write, some of these strugglers might work out a sentence and a half, but they're there and they're engaged. Many will say, you know, there is only 1 hour in the week that I look forward to, and that's coming to class.
Does that keep you coming to class?
Oh, yes, it does. Oh, yes, it does. Yeah, as long as my jaws continue to work and I still get excited about it, I will continue to go. I also think it's an activity that many, many, many other lay people with various areas of knowledge would love to share with inmates. And I guess I would like to say it is not a spooky experience at all. You know, you've got a guard every 5 feet. You have a little personal protection device you have with you. The rooms are monitored. The door is open. There are glass panels along the side of it. The guards are constantly walking back and forth. As I say to a lot of people, you're probably safer in the prison than you are crossing the parking lot at Siena Heights at night. And the gratification is wonderful. It is a win-win situation. Yeah.
Sister, do you believe rehabilitation inside the prison is possible?
It is, but as some of the men have said, if it happens, it tends to be generated by the men themselves. In other words, at some point, they've read something. Interestingly, a lot of the inmates become readers in prison because there's nothing else to do and they're bored. Some of them because they go to the religious services on Sunday and something triggers, you know, what Lincoln would have called one of their better angels. Mm-hmm. They begin to recognize that some of the values they may have picked up as a gang member, for instance, the only thing that's important is having respect, and you get that by intimidating other people. That begins to get dismantled. When they read good literature and see characters who make different choices, even under duress and under stress, they begin to recognize that maybe there's a different way to address this issue. One of my favorite short stories by an African-American writer who was in Ohio State Prison for 7 years and started writing and publishing stories in prison, and one is called The Visiting Hour. And it's about a wife who comes to see her husband. All he's concerned about is she doing enough to get him out? He is very selfishly focused on, did you talk to the lawyer? Have you gone to see the judge? You know, maybe if we pay so-and-so more money, he'll do more to get me out. And then he accuses her of not really caring about him sufficiently. And finally, she leaves in tears. And so I have them read that story. And one of the inmates wrote in his response to it, I could see myself in Chester. I could see myself, and I realized this was what I was doing to my own brother. I was calling him up and saying, have you talked to the lawyer? Can you do this? Da, 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 et cetera. And he said, it dawned on me that he has a family he's trying to take care of, and he has other expenses and other kinds of business that he has to deal with. And I called him, and I apologized. I thought, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, what a great story. What a great story and a great confession. So that's one of the little advantages, I guess, of reading literature where they can find themselves in it and see, yeah, I do this too. It's not very attractive. I don't admire it. I don't want to do it again.
You present a remarkable, remarkable story, Sister, in these many, many years of going to the prison and working with those inmates at Gus Harrison Correctional Facility. I'm really glad we had a chance to share your story with all of our listeners.
Thank you very much. It's a treat to be here, and I'm delighted to talk about it, as you are now well aware. So thank you for the opportunity.
Sister Pat Schnapp is a professor of English at Siena Heights University in Adrian, a poet and a writer. Thank you, Sister.
Thank you.